Call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Silence your cell phones, it's a couple of minutes after 11 o'clock. We do have time constraints, many people want to go to the luncheon. So we're going to be out of here, try to be out of here by a quarter to. If not, if we're not done, we'll come back and deal with it, but let's try to get it done. We have, joining us today, we have Senator Stedman, Senator Olson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, Senator Cronk, and Senator Kaufman. We are going to be dealing with the production forecast from the Department of Natural Resources. We're going to have the presentation by Commissioner Designee John Crother. Please identify yourself, come forward, identify yourself, and identify your team as well.
Thank you, Chair Hoffman. For the record, my name is John Crother, Commissioner Designee at the Department of Natural Resources. Appreciate yourself, Chairman, and members of the committee. In light of our time constraints this morning, I'll just be very brief for an introduction, let my team do a quick introduction of themselves, and then we'll proceed right to our presentation. In short summary, we're here to present our production forecast. It's something we do annually, and we're continuing to see a tremendous amount of activity on the slope, and we'll summarize that today. Consequently, our production forecast does, at 10 years out, have us over 650,000 barrels per day in the 2034 window, which we think is a very significant part of the hard work of the department and part of all the investments that are going on the slope right now. So very exciting story to share today. We'll move quickly in light of the committee's schedule limitations, and I'll let my team introduce themselves, and we'll move forward.
Thank you.
For the record, I'm Derek Nottingham. I'm the director of the Division of Oil and Gas, and I'll be very brief and just turn it over to Travis at this point for the presentation.
For the record, my name is Travis Peltier. I'm a petroleum reservoir engineer in the Resource Evaluation Section of the Division of Oil and Gas within the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. I graduated from the University of Alaska Fairbanks in 2006 with a master's degree in mechanical engineering and have spent 19 years working in Alaska's oil industry since. In 2021, I joined the Department of Natural Resources in my current position, and in 2022, I was honored to ask to lead the development of the state of Alaska's oil production forecast, and I'm honored to continue leading that team today as we present to you the forecast that we develop biannually. Today, we'll be talking about Alaska's oil production forecast for the next decade. For your awareness, the Department of Natural Resources has been performing this analysis since 2016. So with that, we'll keep moving on. I'm just going to briefly say that the second slide, I'm not going to address at all, other than it's a reference list of acronyms for folks to have in the future. Any relevant acronyms are also listed at the bottom of every slide that we have as necessary. Today, the agenda is going to focus on a forecast preview, a review of the fiscal year 2025 in review. We won't be talking about forecasting much there, but just how fields have actually done. And then we'll transition on to the fall 2025 forecasting approach and results. We do have some material in an appendix, which we do not plan to present unless relevant questions show up. So, just to show everyone now, we're on slide 4 here for the fall 2025 North Slope annualized forecast. I'm just going to talk about the chart elements before we move on, since the chart elements are going to be fairly repetitive through this presentation. We'll see this on a number of charts where the fiscal year annualized average daily oil production rate listed in barrels of oil per day is on the left-hand or the y-axis. And then we'll have fiscal years on most charts on the bottom. This is a fiscal year chart. Some will have calendar years. I will specify that for the one that we have that for. Along with that, this chart is made up of the Department of Revenue Revenue Sources Book, Table 6-8, where the low official forecast and high can be found. This is, however, charted up for reference. And you can see that our low forecast, our high forecast brackets the official forecast put out by the Department of Natural Resources and published by the Department of Revenue, where we're producing around 465,000 barrels of oil per day in fiscal year 2026. As some production projects come online, that climbs through time to the high 600,000 barrels of oil per day. And that's what makes up the official forecast. Every year, the department has confidential discussions with operators across the North Slope and the Cook Inlet, and so we actually receive from them their views of a forecast as well. We create ours wholly independently, but we sum theirs up to see what it looks like, only for operated fields, so fields currently on production. And so that's what makes up the operator line that you see here on this chart. So for the next few years, you can see that the operator forecast starts higher and then goes lower than ours. And that's, again, because new projects like PICA Phase 1 are not included in the operator forecast. All right, moving along.
Just real quick, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we're really short of time, but I think we need to start taking a shift in our barrel production forecast and clearly delineate, and I'll be working with Department of Revenue with this also, because for those watching at home, revenue covers the production tax, property tax, and you guys do the royalties. But we have a significant issue dealing with GVR barrels, and we at the table need to know, and the public needs to know, the split of the barrels and what category of GVR they fall in, 20 or 30% gross value reduction. And it creates the new barrels, and it's a significant issue. So we'll be asking for projections on the legacy barrels and both categories of GVR barrels from your department, and then asking revenue then to break down the revenue forecast amongst those categories. Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult for many members to understand why oil production is going to go up and the severance tax is going to go down. That's not going to be a fun issue to deal with. So I think the sooner we delineate it and the magnitude, the better. And it's a little different than historically, because we've always concentrated on just the aggregate barrels. But we're looking at, I think, about a 17% of GVR barrels from 3% last year. So, and it's going to escalate to 40% barrels by 33. So we're talking major shifts here.
Spend money to make money.
Yep.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Chief, you have a response?
Chair Hoffman and Senator Stedman, we're absolutely happy to work with the department and the committee to share more information there.
Yep.
Thank you. Please proceed.
For the record, Travis Peltier. So moving on to fiscal year 2025 in review, again, we will have only some ancillary forecast on here. This is a review of how did we do last year when we came and presented this fiscal year 2025 forecast. Again, just given the time, I'm only going to hit the highlights here. Last year, we did present a forecast. DNR mean forecast at the time was just under 467,000 barrels. The actual production for last year came in just under 468,000 barrels. Typically, we are looking to get plus or minus 5% on a forecast for what we consider an acceptable range. Last year, we were within 0.3%, so we did all right. And if you take a look at the summation of last year's operator forecast, you can see if we had just used their number, they would have forecasted an aggregate of just over 486,000. So actuals came in less than the operator roll-up as well. And again, just for the sake of time, I'm going to read the forecast shaping the factors shaping the forecast horizon bullets, and we can stop if we have any questions along the way. Just a couple positive highlights and some challenges to address. Industry interest in the Brookian topset prospects, both on state and federal land, continues. So this is exemplified by the exploration success of Sockeye 2A that's publicly released. We do continue to see industry interest in those Brookian topset plays across the entirety of the North Slope. Along with that, exploration activities and opportunities on federal leases have increased with the current administration. So we see four wells being explored right now in the NPRA. That's the plan for this winter. We'll see how those results turn out in the fullness of time, of course, but it's exciting to see exploration continue and increase. Along with that, we do see that moderate oil prices and capital discipline across the industry are headwinds for development generally. So lower prices typically lead to restricted development. Higher oil prices, of course, the inverse of that is true. And then the last bullet point, inflation, relatively high interest rates, and insurance challenges are affecting North Slope exploration costs and operations.
Zeg. And for the public's information, NPRA stands for?
The National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska.
Thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the low 60s are moderate oil prices, what's low?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I'd say probably anything in the industry less than $50 a barrel would be considered very low at this point in time. 60 is uncomfortably low, if I'm going to make it qualitatively a statement, but not unreasonable.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Please proceed.
This is a new slide that we started introducing last year. This shows a monthly breakout of how the fiscal year 2025 forecast was going to look when we presented it last year. There was not a full year of data behind it. We'll have something later on to show the effect of PICA Phase 1 on an 18-month view, but I just wanted to reintroduce everyone to this slide since it was new. So this just shows how we did versus the forecast. I think we can all understand the monthly forecast. If we go to the left-hand side of the chart where it says oil production rate, that corresponds to the, I'll call it a high-frequency line for actual daily data that we get. We can plot along here for the orange line with all the, without a better term, squiggles in it. And then you can average those per month. That's what you see the monthly flat bars represent is that forecast with an average for the month. And there's not much of a difference between blue, the forecast line, and the purple daily run tickets monthly average until about the June of 2025 timeframe. And so that's where our forecast versus actual started to diverge in the positive for actual production. Now, to bring everyone to the left or the right-hand side of the chart where you have cumulative production on the year, that stands for millions of stock tank barrels of oil. The expectation was that last year we would produce roughly about 170 million barrels of stock tank oil for the entirety of the 12-month forecast, and that's about where we ended up, around 170 million barrels. The important thing to note for the chart that looks like a straight line is you're looking for a divergence between the dash blue, which is actually under the orange. Since both the forecast and the actuals were so close, you do not see much of a divergence on here until the end of the period.
Please proceed.
Moving on to slide 8, this is, again, not forecast. This is, however, just actual. So I wanted to get a sense of how actual North Slope fields are producing and what major activity has led to any changes that we've had up here. The highlights, just to bring it up, you know, we expect all fields, you know, a lot of the fields on the North Slope are legacy fields. They've been online and producing since the late 1970s or early 1980s, the backbone of the Alaskan oil industry right now. We're expecting these legacy fields to see a year-on-year decline. That is normal. That's natural. Operators do reinvest in those fields to try to slow that or arrest that decline and even see production increases. So just want you to know that. And last year, I think there's a positive story in terms of fiscal year 2025. Overall, on the entire North Slope, production increased by roughly 1.5%. So roughly a 7,000 barrel per day increase year on year due to the efforts of the operators on the North Slope. Overall, that's a great story. Again, since we have a limited amount of time, I'm going to skip the chart on the top right, and I'll just hit a few of the highlights on the chart on the bottom right. Some of the highlights I want to point out, the Prudhoe Bay field looks like it has declined about 3,000 barrels of oil per day. Just a point of reference, this field produces over 200,000 barrels of oil per day per year on average. You'd expect a decline rate there to be, you know, closer to 10,000 barrels per day, but the operator has been doing a lot of reinvestment and bringing new projects and parts of the field online, managing their well stock as best they can. And so they had that decline last year only at 3,000 barrels per day year on year, which for a field of that size is a spectacular result. On the positive side, if you focus on the Kuparuk River unit, a similar development here. ConocoPhillips is the operator of the Kuparuk River unit. They've had excellent base performance, meaning they've managed their existing well stock along with bringing on a few new projects over the past few years. In years past, we've talked about a Coyote project, and then last year there was a KRU Nunatorok project, along with drilling in their Schrader Bluff West Sac development. The well results have been very positive, and so year on year, the Kuparuk River unit actually increased dramatically in production as well for a field of that size. And then a perennial story we've been sharing is for Milne Point. We actually have a slide later on that, so I'll just suffice it to say that last year Milne Point production increased another 4,000 barrels per day, and we'll have some highlights here in a minute.
Questions? question, Senator Stedman.
I'd like, Mr. Chairman, if we could, a little more explanation back to the committee on Point Thompson. Point Thompson looks like there's some development. Hillcore's up there doing a very expensive well, and we're moving forward with Point Thompson. But the issue with Point Thompson, and it was a loser when we did it financially because of the billions of dollars we put in credits, and it was driven by the state, you know, and with Exxon being the developer there. They were more or less forced into it. But I'm curious on the financial status of that decision. It should be turning to be more positive now after a decade or so. And we've also have to deal with the tariff, the additional tariff coming out of Point Thompson. So I'd like to know the history of that tariff since its inception, because a tariff should be coming down also and making more Point Thompson more profitable. So it would be nice if we can get later on some information back on the Point Thompson in isolation.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Please proceed.
For the record, Travis Peltier. Moving on to Milne Point as the highlight slide, we just wanted to kind of cover in detail some of the positives we've seen at Milne Point over the past few years, especially since Hillcorp took over operatorship in November of 2014. What you see here is a calendar year now, the only calendar year production chart we have, going all the way back to 1995 when BP, the prior operator, took over operatorship of the Milne Point unit. On the left-hand side, you have oil daily production rates. This goes from 0 to 60,000 barrels a day for reference. We do have water daily production rates on the right-hand side as well. That's represented by the blue dashed line. Again, just for brevity, we'll talk only about oil here. And in July of 1998, when BP was operating the field, Milne Point was designed for Kuparik aged reservoir. It has relatively hotter oil, lighter oil to go through its production facilities. And BP was able to hit a maximum monthly average rate of 58,893 barrels per day. So that was the highest production rate in Milne Point history. After that, you know, BP continued to develop the Kuparik, but the play eventually kind of started to decline, as all reservoirs do. And there was some Schrader Bluff development, which is a shallower horizon. The oil is colder, heavier, thicker, harder to produce. And at some point in time, BP decided to sell the field to Hillcorp, sell the operatorship. Hillcorp saw a large opportunity to implement new technology to develop that thicker, heavier, viscous oil. So they implemented polymer flooding and a continuous drilling program circa 2018. And what you've seen ever since with that continuous development is a dramatic increase in oil production out at Milne Point, culminating in the last month that we have data for, where Hillcorp's operatorship high average was 50,906 barrels per day again. Pretty positive story, and I'll see if Derek has anything else he'd like to add for this.
Chair Hoffman.
Nottingham.
For the record, Derek Nottingham. I just wanted to point out it's very rare that you see a field like this where you see the primary peak production and then the decline and then a rejuvenation of the field, and the production actually achieves the same level of magnitude as that primary peak, you know. So very, very close to the 50-plus thousand barrels that was achieved back in the early 2000s, late 90s. That's a very rare thing. The operator has done an outstanding job here, as Travis mentioned, being able to adjust their facilities to produce this more viscous oil. And Hillcorp has just recently taken ownership of the Agurik and Nikaichuk fields, which are very, very similar in the reservoir type and operations. So we're excited to kind of see what they're going to do with those fields as well.
Senator Stedman and Senator Frank.
Just, again, for additional information, I think we have 9 conditioning plants, if I remember right. If we could get the department to get back to us on the status of the oil ratio of water and gas, depending what field you're looking at, Prudhoe or Kuparik or what have you. And the capacity of those plants, I think they've had a lot of work done to them over the years. And as I recall, a decade and a half ago, they were all running at capacity except for one. So if we can get that updated, I think in your old files, you'll find some work that the Finance Committee had you guys do years ago, but it'd be nice to get that referenced again.
Yes, thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Cronk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Is there any way to get a number of how much money Hilcorp invested to get that oil production back up to the 50,000 barrels? I mean, we talk about investment back in, you know, I would be really interested for people to understand how much money they reinvested to get the production back.
Senator Cronk, through the chair, John Crowther for the record. I suspect that is probably confidential data. The Department of Revenue would potentially have access to it, but be limited in its distribution. The operator may be able or willing to disclose that as well, but from the department's perspective, we certainly understand significant drilling activity, so rigs, crews, and then also work on the facility. So it's, as we understand it, been a significant investment.
Thank you, Senator Cronk. Mr. Peltier, please continue.
For the record, Travis Peltier. Through the chair, Co-Chair Stedman, we will get you the updated file. I know the one you're talking about. And one plug, too, just before we leave this slide, we do have public information from the AOGCC available in charts. There's a link there where it says detailed field charts. If anyone is interested, you can go dig down to the well level at any field across both Alaska's North Slope and Cook Inlet and get any production information or well injection information you'd like to. So I just want to put a plug in there that's publicly available for anybody.
Except for cost.
Well, it's just oil, gas, and water production, yes.
Thank you. Please proceed.
So, again, I'll keep this brief since I know we're pressed for time here. But we did want to highlight five projects that are coming across the North Slope. They're very material to the production forecast over the next 10 years. That's Pikka Phase 1, Pikka Phase 2, both operated by Santos. Willow, operated by ConocoPhillips, the Colville River Unit CD8 project, which is a new pad within an existing field, also operated by ConocoPhillips. And then a new project for this year that was not included in any prior forecasts, operated by Hilcorp, the Prudhoe Bay Unit Project Taiga, which involves two new pads being developed, Omega Pad or OPAD. You might see either of those in the news. It's the same pad. And then iPad would be the second pad developed. Again, just for brevity, I'll go through these relatively quick. Pikka Phase 1 is a new project. It's very exciting, expected to come online in the first quarter of 2026, so that's this year, and have a peak rate of 80,000 barrels of oil per day. Again, we have a slide later on to show the effect of Pikka over the next 18 months, combined with other activities that will be happening on the North Slope. So when we hope to see that oil production come through, the uncertainty on that is significantly less on the time constraint, given it's only a few months out. Pikka Phase 2 is intended to follow Pikka Phase 1. Santos, the operator, is focused on finishing that project first before they move on to Pikka Phase 2. And the peak rate out of Pikka Phase 2 is expected to be 80,000 barrels in a day in addition to Phase 1. So for a total of 160,000 barrels of oil per day when both projects are online and at peak. What's not on here but was asked about a number of times is there is a Pikka Phase 3 project, and that's intended to be infill drilling where as space opens up in the production facility, there'd be new pad, new drilling happens to fill that space. That would be a Pikka Phase 3, and it's not on this slide, but it is in the production forecast. Moving on to the next big field that we've all, I think, heard about a number of times over the past few years is Willow, again operated by ConocoPhillips. And that project is now more than 50% complete and remains on track for first oil in 2029. The Willow Central facility modules are currently under construction, and they're planned to transit to the North Slope in 2027. The peak rate for that facility is expected to be 180,000 barrels of oil per day. And then moving on to what I call new pads, just as equally important, new pads within existing fields, the Colville River Unit CD8 project. ConocoPhillips started an environmental impact statement with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers as the lead agency last year. A notice of intent was created on September 9th of 2025. Stakeholder engagement is ongoing. A draft environmental impact statement is comment period is expected to wrap up in the fall of 2026, and a record of decision for that project by early 2027. First oil is expected to be 2030, and we don't have a public rate estimate for this. We wanted to share with this committee our internal rate estimate for the mid case of about 20,000 barrels of oil per day. And then the last project, I'll just kind of skip again. I know we have less time perhaps than normal, but the OmegaPad and iPad projects operated by Hillcorp are brand new. They're expected to be a couple years apart. OmegaPad will be the first one. First oil for that is expected in 2028, so relatively close here in time. Another couple of years after that, 2 to 3 years, we expect iPad to come online. Peak rate for both of those pads being online should be around 40,000 barrels of oil per day.
Chair Hoffman, for the record, Derek Nottingham, I just want to add that Project Tioga is basically a continuation of what Hillcorp has been doing at the Milne Point field. It just kind of carries into the Prudhoe Bay area, and so again, that redevelopment profile, that increased production that we saw in Milne Point, and kind of expect some of those same type of activities to occur there.
Thank you, Mr. Nottingham. Mr. Peltier, please continue.
For the record, Travis Peltier. So now we're going to talk about Alaska's other oil and gas production basin, the Cook Inlet. So again, what we see here, I'm going to skip the chart again on the top right, other than to know that this is a mature basin. The first fields came on in 1958. So there's been over seven decades of production out of the Cook Inlet. It's been a fascinating engine for the state of Alaska and continues to be very important. One note is that oil from the Cook Inlet Basin is critical to the in-state refinery that we have down there. All of that oil is utilized. And then Hillcorp, however, is prioritizing natural gas development out of necessity for South Central needs. So there's not a lot of oil production oil well drilling going on in the Cook Inlet. And so what you typically see here, again, is since they're trying to manage the well stock as best they can, year-on-year oil decline out of the Cook Inlet oil field specifically. If anyone is noticing, the Redoubt Shoal did have a production increase year-on-year, and that's because some pretty good well work came out of that well. They are still managing the wells. They're just not drilling new ones. So the Redoubt Shoal did see a production increase. Everything else was a decrease, and I will move on again for brevity. So moving on to slide 12, just a brief note. For the past 3 years or so, we have not made any changes to how we create the production forecast, with the exception of removing a mathematical bias last year. That mathematical bias is still removed. So, moving on to slide 13, how do we build the forecast? So just in summary, the way we build the forecast is we use AOGCC data of all the publicly available pools that we have. That sums up to about 41 pools across the Alaska North Slope and the Cook Inlet that are producing as of June 30th, 2025. So to be considered, in the forecast for decline curve analysis, you had to be online by that time. There are, however, projects that come on in the middle of the forecast period. For instance, Pikka is anticipated to come on at the end of March of 2026, the middle of the fiscal year 2026 forecast period. We leave that as a project, along with 12 other projects that we created based off of conversations that were confidential from operators, along with publicly available plan of development documents. So we review all of that and create our projects list. The ultimate number of projects, other than infill drilling on the North Slope, is we have 12 distinct projects on the Alaska North Slope and then one in the Cook Inlet. We break these out into different categories of production, as illustrated on slide 14. For the existing fields that were online as of June 30th, 2025, we lump those into what we call current production. So that's all the production from existing fields. We consider well uptime, operator spending to maintain base production, and any changes to reservoir management that are expected for those fields when we create our production forecast and adjust them for the future. Along with that, we have two additional production categories, the underdevelopment and the under-evaluation category. In brief, the underdevelopment category, UD, is effectively infill drilling, so new money that's being spent, new capital that's being deployed to existing fields. All of the new projects and drilling outside of the one-year window, so drilling in years 2 through 10, and all of the new projects are in the under-evaluation category by definition. A map of where the projects are. Again, this is the 12 Alaska North Slope projects. They cannot be online and producing by June of 2025. So again, they were offline at the time, or they had not yet been put into production, I should say. We do have a higher risk factor associated with these new projects than we do existing fields, but they all have to be known discoveries with identifiable operators and require major investment to be considered in our list. Those 12 North Slope projects are the Willow Project in the east. In the west. This project list is going to transverse from west to east. The Willow Project is the farthest most west project on federal land, followed by the Colville River Unit Narwhal CD8 project, which has mixed acreage. Horseshoe Stirrup, just to the south of that, also in mixed acreage. The Pika Unit, which is non-producing, as we've talked about, but it has three projects within the unit boundaries. The Pika Unit Development, Pika Phase 2, Pika Phase 3. And then as we continue to go to the east, we see Quokka and Midcuck now on state lands. And then the Prudhoe Bay Unit, again farther to the east. The Omega Pad and iPad are on the very western edge of the Prudhoe Bay Unit, and as Director Nottingham mentioned, just south of the Milne Point Unit, so a continuation of the trend that Hillcorp has been very successful with. And then the last three projects for the Alaska North Slope we considered for this year are south of Prudhoe Bay, and that's the Theta West, Talitha, and Alcade projects.
Senator Stedman.
Just briefly, could you get back to the committee on the, I think it's Pika that's coming on this year? That gives us kind of an anomaly blip up from our historical projections. So if you could break those barrels out for us per day, it should be easy to do for FY27.
Commissioner. Senator Sipman, through the chair, John Crowther for the record, be happy to share that with the committee. For the committee's reference, the project expected to come on this quarter, so in the coming months, okay. Come on at a rate of maybe 20, 30,000 barrels per day at the startup, and then ramp up through the coming months, and this year reach 80,000 barrels per day. But we'll share that information with the committee.
Senator Sipman.
Yes, and just the aggregate per year barrels for this year, next year, that would work. I don't need anything too fancy, but that'll make it easy to keep track of the underlying production, how it's moving versus these two additions.
Understand. Thank you, Senator.
Right, thank you, Senator Stedman. Mr. Peltier, please continue.
Yeah, for the record, Travis Peltier. So we're moving on to slide 16 now, the fall 2025 production forecast results and summary. So this is a chart. We had already seen this one on slide 4, so I'm not going to go over the chart again, but I will talk about the bullet points that we see here on the short term. The DNR forecast for fiscal year 2026 annualized average daily statewide production is going to be expected to be 464,500 barrels of oil per day, with North Slope production averaging 457,000 barrels of oil per day. Again, we do put a range on here. It's roughly plus or minus 5% is how it turns out. So the low end of the range and the high end of the range goes from 418,400 barrels of oil per day to 495,300 barrels of oil per day for fiscal year 2026. The operator line for fiscal year 2026 sums to 476,000 barrels of oil per day. So you can see our forecast summary versus theirs is about a 19,000 barrel of oil per day difference. In the long term, our forecast is gauged by a comparison between both the operator's aggregates and our internal forecast. We're happy to see that the operator long-term outlook falls within our range. Again, if you look between the low and the high, it is a large discrepancy, don't get me wrong, but it's not massively different. And then the outlook, of course, assumes that production plans from the operators remain unchanged. So as activity changes, our assumptions become outdated, we have to adjust the forecast, and we do that twice a year, once in the fall, which we wrapped up in late November, early December, and we'll refresh this again for this body in March. Moving on to slide 18. So I had promised an 18-month view of daily data from a chart we'd kind of shared earlier. So this is the daily actual rate, and again, the high-frequency line is that daily run ticket monthly. And then you have a forecast line in blue that you can see early on in time for July, August, September, October, November, and December. It just so happens that the daily run tickets monthly data in the forecast matches up quite well, so there's no real discrepancy there. Again, if we look at the cumulative production barrels, what we look for is kind of a break, you know, how much gap is there between the dashed line that pretty much goes up straight versus that orange line. As long as they are tracking together, things look good. We're happy about that. As we put this chart together, the last day we had data for when we had to submit this, was January 14th, and right now we're running a little over, but I wouldn't get, you know, I always get more excited in the June timeframe than I do right now. So what I wanted to highlight, however, was we've talked a lot today about PICA Phase 1 coming online at the end of March 2026, and that ramp up is going to start, I don't want to say slow, but it's not going to start up at 80,000 barrels of oil per day. We're expecting initial production at a fraction of that and to hold steady while the new operation starts up and the operators figure out how to best optimize and run the plant. We do, however, expect that ramp up to occur in the summer of 2026. That does coincide with summer turnaround activity from the legacy fields. So as summertime temperatures increase, fields like Prudhoe Bay and the Kuparuk River unit actually are less efficient on gas processing, so you naturally see oil production decline anyway in the summer months. So along with that, those operators take the time in the summer to do summer maintenance and turnaround activities. So as PICA is ramping up at the exact same time, the legacy fields will be going into these summer slowdown phases. And so those activities will finally ramp up in the end of the summer, August of 2026. That's when you see a large production increase on this chart, and that has to do with the PICA Phase 1 ramp-up combined then with the cessation of summer turnaround activities with the legacy fields on the North Slope. So that's why you see that production increase finally in fiscal year 2027.
Questions? Please proceed.
Moving on to slide 19, I believe this is the last slide that we have with charts. The Alaska statewide annualized forecast production categories. I just want to highlight both of the charts, again, for brevity. What we have on the left-hand chart is the production forecast categories. Again, the current production category in blue, which shows the importance of the legacy fields. The next 12 months only of drilling within those legacy fields is the underdevelopment, or the orange wedge that we see. While it's a small wedge, it's a very material wedge. So it's very important that we continue to see drilling activity across the North Slope. And then in the under evaluation, that gray wedge, all the drilling in years 2 through 10, along with the new projects, are included in that. Overlaid on this is the spring of 2025 production forecast, just to see the change from last year to this year. One of the biggest changes we, of course, see is due to PICA Phase 1. The time uncertainty for us on PICA Phase 1 is extremely narrow this year, whereas in years prior, we still kept a relatively large range of time uncertainty. So that's why you see in 2027 this current forecast exceeding spring of 2025's forecast in the near term. If you look at the chart on the right, again, the gray bars, they're very similar in time. We do have some projects shifting out kind of in the 3 to 5 year time frame where the time uncertainty increased from various operators. Because of that, you do see a gap showing between the spring of 2025 forecast on the projects only and this current forecast.
Do you remember what the peak production was for the pipeline back in the day? 2 million and what?
Yeah, it was Director Nottingham was just reminding me. It's 2 million barrels of oil per day was around peak. I can't recall if it was 2 or 2.5, but definitely in the order of magnitude, 2 million barrels of oil per day.
I remember those days. I wish they could come back. But the further question is the it is expected to that the oil production on the slope will continue for decades to come?
Chair Hoffman, yes.
Are there any additional questions that finance members may have of the department? Do you have any closing comments, Commissioner?
Chair Hoffman, my colleague Travis, I think, may have some closing comments as well. I would just say, as we shared at the outset, we have a good news story here to share today, and that's that there's an enormous amount of activity occurring, enormous amount of investment occurring, and we're seeing production increases. And we'll work with the committee to provide additional specific information on the topics discussed today.
And I'd like to thank the department for accommodating our schedule today. It's been a little bit hectic, but that concludes the work that this committee has today, and our next meeting will be tomorrow, Friday, January the 23rd at 9 a.m. We will be getting the revenue forecast from the Department of Revenue. Anything else to come before the committee? With that, we will be adjourned.